Welcome to MGO Podcast 11.7. This podcast is a lot like the football game. It starts off a lot like you'd expect, but then it takes a weird and possibly very bad turn. I got a new phone, and it's really slippery.
We're really starting with this.
Look, I just don't understand why they make phones so slippery.
It's a conspiracy so that you have to get new screens after you shatter them on a regular basis when you drop your phone.
Or what else could you buy right after you buy your phone?
A case.
Okay.
So then that's a racket. It's a racket.
It's like when PlayStation...
Everything else.
Well, it's like when PlayStation's like, you need to buy memory cards.
Name them.
Food gatherers?
Okay.
Yeah!
You named a non-profit. I will give you that.
Yeah. The Red Cross? Actually.
See, you stepped in it.
Anyway, my phone is very slippery. And so is Michigan's grip on this football game.
Oh, boy. That was a segue.
That was pretty good.
Huh?
I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
Credit where credit's due.
All right. But now we have to talk about the football game.
But if we're giving credit, who should we give credit to?
We should give credit to our sponsors. Our sponsors are the Bow Store and Underground Printing, our presenting sponsors, Homeshore Lending, the Residence in Ann Arbor downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Perrin Brewing, and The Athletic. I am Brian Cook.
I am a Sam Bender.
David Ness.
Every week.
We got some sad touchdowns to talk about this week.
I thought we had a sad field goal to talk about, and then that game changed in a hurry.
Maybe on the presumptuous side.
My bad.
MGO Podcast 11.6.
It's 11.7, but... We're just named numbers.
I mean, that's about...
You know...
That was the MGO Podcast 11.7?
Yeah.
Just that noise.
But a lot of our podcasts have been similar to that.
So Michigan hops out to a 28-0 lead, and everybody's like, this is almost as sad as watching Rutgers try to football. And then it's like 25-28, and Michigan is like covered in butter. Like not like sexy butter, like fumble butter.
Which they have been for much of the season. They really need to figure out how to, you know, not have that happen.
Did they ever de-butter? I guess against
Iowa. They weren't buttered against Rutgers, which was the worst time to not be buttered. Who cares?
I guess they did recover a lot of fumbles against Iowa.
I guess butter is a little slippery, but I think I should have gone with something else.
Maybe this was a Crisco game.
They're covered with your phone.
Ah!
Yeah, it was right there for you, man.
They covered the ball in phone materials. Next time, Michigan shouldn't bring the new phone balls.
It should get a case.
It should bring the case balls.
Love to see if Michigan break out a football covered in a grip case for the next home game.
That would actually be awesome. That would really be awesome.
I am so for it. Just wait and see if the refs actually step in.
Why is the football twice as big, guys? I can't.
I mean, it might be harder to throw, but at this point, who cares? It could even help.
All right. Let's get.
I'm not joking about any of this.
Let's get slightly more serious.
I refuse.
So Michigan comes out and they just run the ball down the throats of, I was going to call them Rutgers, but they're actually Illinois.
I mean, it did look like Rutgers for a while.
Yeah, and they bring back that orbit motion. And for some ungodly reason, Illinois is like, man, we got to worry about this.
Yeah, we respect the hell out of this orbit motion.
Probably because
they
never
run utilized.
It.
So they send a guy with it, and they pay attention to Patterson as an ambient human being who may ambulatory. He's not. He's not just in the air around us. He's not the Holy Spirit. He's
not Kenny G music.
Right. Ambulatory. An ambulatory human. who may in fact keep the ball. And so you see the floodgates open. You see Nick Eubanks get a lot of nice kickout blocks on split zone where Illinois is scrape exchanging. And so that's tough because the defensive end is coming down hard. And he's able to like come at him and be like, ugh. And then because Onwenu and Bredesen had good games and were able to clear out interior defensive linemen, then you get the gaps and then you get big chunks.
It's a very like grunty podcast so far.
Yeah, well,
well, when you're running the ball a lot.
Yeah. Man ball.
It was a very man ball first half.
I thought I caught a down G in there too.
They did. They ran, they brought back the pin and pull. They had some down G stuff, and the down G stuff, you know, twin tight ends, they slant away, and then there's only one guy on the edge. Charbonnet shows some nice patience.
And that, that Patterson keeper late was a pin and pull, right?
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
Between that and the sweep?
Yeah, like if it's just...
There were like a couple guys pulling.
Yeah, there were so it kind of reminded me of last year and what Michigan State does a lot, well, what they used to do, where critical third and X late, all right, time for to bring out the quarterback run.
Yeah.
And then you get your numbers evened up.
Boy, it'd be nice to see that on other times.
And then you kind of see the degradation of Michigan's ground game when Illinois
stops respecting that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you see Michigan in the first half, they get that touchdown right after the punt block because there's a linebacker who's headed out to deal with Shea Patterson on a potential keeper, and Patterson doesn't keep it, so yeah, you get that guy back. And then, you know, in the second half, you start getting some incidents where they're running arc and the keep read is blinding.
And
it's not being kept, particularly on the fourth and two where, you know, Eubanks releases and he's like, oh.
There's nobody here.
This is like last year. And handoff, crashing defensive end, done. And there was an incident like that in the third quarter. And that was important because, you know, Michigan comes out, they have the horrible, horrible possession to start the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Illinois doesn't score, but they have the ball for a while. And Michigan gets one first down and out. And that out is in part because Patterson didn't keep on an obvious keep read. At this point...
Illinois did bang in a 50-yard field goal after that Michigan drive.
At this point, that's definitely an is-what-it-is situation, right? Like, Patterson kind of seemed the same. He had some nice plays, especially when he was allowed to sit in the pocket for a long time, found Ronnie Bell a couple times, you know, tried some longer shots, although in this game with the wind.
Throwing wasn't really.
Throwing like a deep punt up is less of a...
Matt Robinson kept throwing some accidental back shoulder fades.
Yeah, and what...
when they kind of worked.
Yeah, and Ambry almost picked one off.
Yeah, so I mean, you know. But with Michigan's... Well, I guess Nico Collins wasn't here, so...
Well, that's why they left him home, because of the wind.
Well, I just
finally had a good reason not to throw to him, so...
That's true, but, you know, this is not the game for the punt-ups, because the wind could do anything with them.
Now, also, Michigan's receivers kept getting dinged up to the point where they had to keep rotating in and out. That was kind of annoying.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have another parade of fumbles. Charbonnet fumbles, although he was targeted on that. Like, no question.
You're adamant on this one.
Indisputable.
If it's targeting.
I mean, the crown of that guy's helmet went into Charbonnet's ear hole.
I'm not arguing what you're saying. I'm just saying that to count on something being targeting seems to be...
I mean, they've at least been fairly consistent about that this year.
It's been better this year, you think?
If the crown of your helmet hits someone in the head, you're out.
Usually, I mean, I'd at least expect on a play where a turnover happens for them to take a second look at
it. Well, so, and they review it.
Yeah.
But they're reviewing it to see if the ball's out. And the
ball's very obviously out, first of all. Yeah. Like, the ball is clearly out.
But this guy's looking at this for like six straight minutes. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. But he sees this happen over and over and over again, and it never occurs to him that, oh,
but he's watching the ball and the knee and how very obviously, like, these things are happening and just doesn't look at the head at all.
So that should have been overturned. I don't know if that absolves Charbonnet.
I don't think
in this case... it's not easy to hold on to something when you get ear-holed unexpectedly.
That's fair.
And then Turner had a fumble on his first carry.
Not great.
Got called back.
Only carry?
But he was still trying to hold on to the football.
Yes.
And then he was no longer holding onto the football.
But that's, you know, not confidence building. And then Patterson has a fumble on an attempted RPO where he pulls it and it's gone. And then, like, the capper.
Here we go.
The just like, we are cursed. Is true frickin' Wilson.
Your boy.
Old reliable.
I don't know if we can call him that anymore.
Is there anyone in the backfield that has played a ball-carrying snap that has not fumbled? Is there one person?
Hassan Haskins?
Right.
I think Andrew Capitina also fulfills that.
Congratulations, Tank.
I don't even know if I got his first name right.
Did you just pick a name?
No, he's on the team.
Yes, I know. But for a first name, were you just like, I'll go with Andrew?
I don't know.
Nicholas Capitina.
I think he did.
Look, I remember his last name, okay?
You did. You did, and you used him technically.
There's
correct.
Also an Anthony Capitina.
Oh, okay. Well, wait.
It's also
but
not
that,
Andrew.
But that wasn't the guy who had the ball. He's a receiver.
No. Well, oh well. Okay, so we're basically anyway. At
and also
Haskins.
He was a senior in 2014.
I bet we didn't expect to get into the rich walk-on legacy of the Capitina family
no.
in this podcast.
No. Next is Apongawusus.
Oh, man, I forgot about those guys.
Yeah. So
great nameplates.
So what do you... I mean... Kind of a serious question. What do you do with this? What do you do when literally everyone fumbles? Is this the systemic thing?
I was like,
I don't know.
My best friend played running back in college, and he asked me that question. And I was like, after this game, I was like, you're the one who's supposed to know this, man.
I'm going
like,
to turn to you.
I was going to ask you whether this is like. Something that can infect a whole team, and he's like, I have never seen anything like this, so that wasn't helpful, and I was hoping it would be.
Well, I don't know. So,
it feels fluky, but it's like, it's an avalanche of fluky.
I mean, they lost 3 fumbles all last year, right? So this isn't like...
But they're putting the ball on the ground like 3 times a game.
I know,
right
I
now.
I I know.
Sorry.
I'm aware.
We're at a very visual podcast moment here. Brian like fully turned to me in that moment.
He was even reaching a little that I was getting kind of
nervous.
There
was like a hoke point.
I pointed. It's fine. I wanted to be emphatic that I know what is happening with the fumbles.
And I should be aware of that. You do comb through all the plays.
But not fully aware.
Anyway...
Anyway, what?
You were saying something, and then I ruined it. I don't know.
You were going to give your take on, is this a systemic thing?
So the Wilson fumble is just like, you know, he's got the ball, it's high and tight, he's got it in his outside arm, and then a guy comes and puts his helmet right on the ball, and I feel like that's happened so much this year.
Like the Mason one at Wisconsin?
And that was like 2 in a row, and I'm just like, maybe it is just a total fluke, and like, because you got everybody on the team doing it. It's not like you got... one guy who's the culprit on a large number of fumbles, except Patterson.
Yeah, like the Patterson ones don't feel fluky because he can be a little bit loose with the ball.
Well, a couple of them
well,
he's also
fumbled
gotten...
like 3 mesh points this year too.
So. That, yeah, there is
that. That is correct, but a couple of them he's gotten blindsided.
Yeah, sure. Like the second fumble against Army is just a pass protection thing.
Turner's the other guy I'm a little worried about.
Yeah.
His fumbles have seemed to be less fluky than others.
And it seems like he's getting fewer carries and still fumbling.
Well, yeah, I mean, he didn't get a carry until the second half.
Which makes me wonder if they've also seen something in practice. And then he looked good running the ball.
When he holds on to it, he looks like dangerous a runner as we have.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden Hassan Haskins is like clearly in front of him for this game.
Yep.
Hassan Haskins 5th on the depth chart and then finally realized, hey, if I don't fumble, I'm probably getting carries.
Hassan Baskins, like he's got a basket where he puts the ball. Never mind.
31 carries.
Are you going to request for us to cut that? Or
no, we're just going to roll with that.
he can request all he wants.
We're just going to roll with that.
So is that it? That's all we got with the fumbles, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know
what else to say about the fumbles.
It's yeah.
They're bad.
It's bad. I hope they stop it.
Do that.
I don't think the running back coaching has changed in any meaningful sense. So
Ronnie Bell had a couple nice catches and runs.
Yeah, and then on the second one, Eubanks like passed him, and he had to like dodge a guy. But I was just like, "Who is that?" That's I was like, "Oh, that's a tight end." Holy cow!
Yeah,
and he got 2 blocks on that play to set Michigan up with 1st and goal. So that was a nice play by Eubanks. He did have a terrible, terrible drop.
Sounds like your reaction,
and then immediately got drilled in the hip.
Yeah. So, but I thought his blocking was pretty good in this game. And I guess we'll see how that holds up on review. And then he had the major assist on the catch and run. And that's something that I think has been a problem. Like when Michigan gets a chance to have a big play, too often, you know, the downfield blocking has been bad. I haven't had a lot of pluses downfield. And, you know,
Michigan's receivers may be in the beep bone.
Yeah. But, one of the things that I don't exactly love about my charting setup is that, so you see all the numbers for the offensive line, and it's like, okay, that's a lot of data, and it's important. And then you get to the wide receiver section, and the wide receiver section is like plus one, minus 0.5.
Which can be tough, because, I mean, like, you're not working with an all-22, so.
Right, but also the fact that, like, so, you know, if Donovan Peoples-Jones has a plus two on blocks, that's probably 30 yards,
yeah.
Right? Because if you get that secondary block enough so that it's material to the play and I hand you a check mark, that means that Michigan had an explosive play. And the number of pluses in that wide receiver column that have been about anything other than running the ball yourself after the catch has been close to zero. And there haven't been that many minuses either because Michigan hasn't had a lot of opportunities, but there have been more of those than pluses. So,
and some of those have been just flat out, like, you don't seem to be trying on this play.
Well,
events.
I don't want to go that far. Like, you are demoralized, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, like, you might have quit on this play a little bit early. Like, I'm not saying it's like a whole, like,
right,
you've quit on the season thing. I would not say that at all for Michigan's receivers. They're hanging in there.
Do you think it is reflective at all on the fact that we're not getting a lot of, like, downfield chunk runs? Because, like, Higdon used to break stuff a little bit more in the last couple of years, and...
Well, Higdon was operating in an environment where his quarterback kept the ball 6 to 8 times
that's
a game.
It is probably easier to be stay ready when you're used
it
to
happens.
The... Yeah, when you look in. It's not a very rare event.
Well, I mean, Michigan did pick up a good block from Black, maybe DPJ, on the sole arc zone keep in this game.
Mm-hmm.
There's like one every game where it's like, oh yeah, that still works.
Yep.
Look, we could do this, maybe.
And then open some stuff up for some other people. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds with the OL takes before I have my full film review. But I did catch some things from Mayfield, who had kind of a Jonas Mouton sort of game. So he buried a guy on the first toss on Haskins' run outside the tackle. He also had a pass set on a run play.
That's less good.
Which is less good, unless you're going up against Rashawn Gary, of course. Sorry, it's just a cool thing that I know about, so I bring it up too often. I shouldn't do it.
It's a cool thing.
It was a cool thing. Like, now that we have some distance from it. Anyway. So that got a run play blown up, and it'll be interesting to see if people blame Mike Onwenu for that. What?
We're moving on. Yeah,
shots fired.
And then he gave up a pressure that was pretty bad that I caught. So there were some ups and downs for his day. Obviously, a very promising guy, but also
still young,
a redshirt freshman. And I thought Onwenu did his usual thing where
he's very good.
Well, he grinds people downfield, and then he has this kind of lack of mobility sometimes that gives some of that back. But he is a consistent pile mover, and it's not a coincidence that a lot of those split zones went behind him. Schoonmaker had a tight touchdown where he looked very smooth and athletic.
Yep.
While getting turned loose by the Illinois secondary.
Yeah.
True.
No, what?
But, you know.
But we're looking for positives now.
Yes.
But he's a big target.
We've completed the
he has looked impressively athletic now.
Yeah.
A couple weeks in a row.
Maybe not with the blocking yet, but at least as a receiver.
He was very bad against Iowa.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
was that Rutgers? It was Rutgers. He was very bad against Rutgers.
That's not good.
Well, no, because the way he was very bad is he was missing all his assignments.
It was freshman bad. It was
right.
Like,
so,
I don't know quite what I'm doing.
There was a play where, like, All and Schoonmaker both went for the same kickout block. And it was like, that's not good. And since...
it's not how it was drawn up.
Schoonmaker was the interior tight end. He's the guy who got dinged. So he's adjusting to the fact that defenses are complicated. But I think he has the ability to block. He just isn't doing it.
So is there any takeaway on what this means about Mustafa Muhammad?
I think that it probably means that Schoonmaker's pretty good.
Yeah,
Nick,
but they're
Muhammad
also
was a pretty touted guy.
They're also,
you're only going to play so many tight ends.
They're also playing a true freshman tight end.
That
who
might
we
be
are all saying
could be a wide receiver.
But has started blocking in a way that makes us have to reevaluate that because he's been pretty darn physical.
And they also burned his red shirt. So
yeah, he's played.
I mean, if you're good enough to see the field, who cares?
Sure, but what does that say about the guy who redshirted last year who was a 4-star tight end?
Well,
he's not developing as quickly as Luke
Schoonmaker. What do you think it says?
Well, right, but I didn't know.
Derek Hall.
I mean, we haven't heard anything about an injury or anything.
Well, the thing about Muhammad is that, like, if you look at his high school production,
yeah,
there wasn't any.
Ah, okay.
So he got through like seasons with like 3 catches.
Well, but he was
then as a
blocking tight end more. So.
No, he was not. As a sophomore, he's like, all right, I'm going to go do these camps. I'm going to be really impressive at these camps, and then he was hurt for like his final camp season. Mm-hmm. So he has like these completely nondescript high school season, camp season as a junior that didn't exist. So like he was a high profile guy, but if I remember correctly, I gave him a very high variance to recruiting profile because he was a guy who didn't really have a lot to back up his ranking.
Is he a guy that is like a project?
Well, he's a project now.
Well,
yeah.
But I mean, was that...
Why are we talking about...
I was about to say, this has turned into the Capitina and Muhammad podcast <That's>, somehow.
It's also Illinois, so...
All right, but this is not... This is,
you're right.
Yeah,
you're
we're
right.
Straying even from... We got to get through the Illinois.
Like when we drove through Illinois? Anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to remember that time.
What?
That's when we ended up in Iowa.
I know, but it was we were just in a van. It was fine. Like, nothing bad happened. You made it sound like we, like...
Lost someone?
There were a lot of orange cones. I remember that being pretty boring.
There were a lot of orange
rails.
All right. I think that's... Are we at the end of the offensive section?
I think it's time to move on.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So, here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's 529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
I'd still strong, never made a sound. Our love was on the rock. Day we let it out, nothing going wrong, nothing going down.
All right, the defense starts off as you would expect the defense to start off against kind of Nick Sheridan and a pretty good ground attack. And then the wheels kind of start coming off late in the second quarter. And kind of the primary reason this starts happening is that Illinois goes tempo. And
seen that before.
For the nth straight year, Michigan has no idea what they're doing. They can't get lined up right. They're getting off the ball consistently wrong. And they're sped up so fast that they just go vertical and the opposition goes with a zone stretch, and then there's big chunks of yards for the taking. This culminates in a 1st and 10 where Michigan stuffs up a run for 4 yards, but they couldn't complete a substitution, so they get an illegal substitution penalty, and that leads to their first touchdown of the day. And
on which Michigan also had to use a timeout before 4th down, in which they were not at all prepared to stop it.
And it was 4th and super short, wasn't it?
It was an extremely obvious tempo and sneak situation that Michigan was not at all ready for.
And so, I mean, Michigan has this issue all of last year where they're one of the worst tempo teams in the country. Their offense can't speed it up in any way whatsoever. Their defense looks lost whenever the opposition goes tempo. And
our theory with that is like, well, Michigan doesn't tempo at all on offense, so like they're not ever seeing it in practice. So when are they going to know how to deal with it? And then this offseason, the hope is, you know, Michigan's going tempo now, and still nothing.
And it also probably means they can't get their scout team to do it.
Well, they can't get their starters to do it.
No, but I mean, if your starters aren't doing it, and then you're trying to prep your defense, your scout team has to be able to do it in order to prep it. And if they can't, I mean, obviously, we don't see that, but you have to assume that they can't get, that the scout team isn't going lightning speed.
No, I think this is a program-wide pattern.
Yeah,
and
has been for a while now.
I mean,
ever.
Well, it's just one of the reasons that like we're in year 5 of the Harbaugh thing, and at this point, there are certain things that don't look like they're ever going to change. And as Michigan fans, we know what this is like. We know that in year 700 of Lloyd Carr, that, you know, they're going to turtle in the 4th quarter with a small lead. Like, that, you know, and on 2nd and long, they're going to run a draw on a screen. Like, that's what's going to happen. So the things that kind of seem like Harbaugh consistencies is they can't go fast. They can't deal with other people going fast. They make some bad decisions at the end of halves. They have a lot of coaching turnover, which is difficult to sustain a consistently good offense with. So, it's just...
We're back to the sounds.
It just is what it is, man. Like, Jim Harbaugh's had some pretty good teams. He has some flaws that I think are going to keep him from reaching the summit of the mountaintop. Maybe he'll get it 1 year or 2 years. But, you know, the hope you get with Jim Harbaugh is, he's going to be clearly one of the best 5 football coaches in the country. And he's not.
Yeah, that has not been the case.
He's probably top 10, but about 5, yeah.
Right, and there's a big difference, right?
Yep, especially when you play teams that are top 5.
Yes, and now there's a little bit of an opening for who's in that because Stoops and Meyer have recently retired.
For the time being.
Retired, air quotes. and I don't think that...
The weird thing is like he turned over his staff for the positive a couple of times, and so you would think that those are things that he has addressed and tried to fix, and in some of those ways, like get it bringing Warner, did. So why can he address that and not other things? I think that's the thing that spins in my mind.
Well, how many offensive coordinators have we had?
Too many.
So it's Jed Fish. I mean, ish, right?
Yeah.
And he was, I mean, you can see the difference between fish and not fish.
And then Pep and Miguel Wayne, and there was someone before Pep, wasn't there? Was it Drevno?
Yeah, Drevno.
Kind of, yeah.
So, and then, so the number of people who have been able to claim some sort of offensive coordinator title, if you include Harbaugh, is like 8.
In 5 years.
And, you know, the number of people who have been able to claim some sort of defensive coordinator title is 2. And the first guy left after 1 year, so you've had this 4-year block where it's just Don Brown's defense. And obviously that unit has had some issues, but it's performing at a much higher level
than
the offense.
And Don Brown has been a pretty much an aggressive man-to-man guy, and he's shown this year that he's willing to adapt, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Well, he's like a top 5 coordinator in the country.
Right.
On defense.
Right.
So, yeah. I feel like, you know, this is just kind of what is going forward, and the tempo stuff is the canary in the coal mine, where it's just like, you had the come to Jesus moment last year. You have not come to Jesus. You are still unsaved in the matter of tempo.
At least they're adjusting to crossing routes.
Yeah.
But the crossing routes is something Don Brown can do.
Yeah, I know.
The tempo is not something Don Brown by himself can do.
It's true.
Anyway, I thought Dwanfor had kind of a rough game after a good one last year. Not last week. A lot of stretch stuff where he went upfield, got sealed out, and allowed a second guy get to the second level. He had his moments, but I think he in particular struggled with the stretch stuff. Should be noted he went off in this game and was kind of
late.
Like, he had this big shoulder brace on that, like, came out of his shoulder pads, and I feel like there are shoulder braces that don't do that. That are like not serious business shoulder braces, and his was like all the way down to his elbow, and he was kind of holding that arm a little funny, so I don't know if he's all the way back from what was more serious than we thought in preseason.
Which makes you wonder if he's going to be right all year at this point, because we're halfway through the season.
Well, he's giving it his best. He's giving it his best. Hutchinson had like a Mongo sack where he just...
He looks like he's becoming legit.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one guy who got anything on Wirfs last week.
And then he takes Illinois' right tackle on this one.
It was supposed to be their best.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And just chucks him to the ground, basically. Yeah.
So he's many of my preseason predictions were bad. This is a good one.
The Aiden Hutchinson breakout is indeed happening.
Pay was a little up and down.
Who?
Quiddy.
I mean Uche. I read Pay on my notes. Yeah, and Pei, I meant Uche.
Pei didn't play in this game.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, Uche was up and down. Like, the pocket integrity that was so good against Iowa kind of didn't happen in this game. And part of that, like, everybody chipped in. But part of that was Uche trying to get upfield, getting stopped, and not coming back. So that was kind of a callback to last year. So there's a 3rd and 3 or something where they got a scramble out of it. I'm like, that's on Uche.
Yeah. And, I mean, the thing is like against Iowa, Stanley was most likely not doing that. Robinson, I think, in this case, is kind of looking for that.
That was kind of best case scenario for right. Illinois. It was for him to see a seam and just run.
Yeah.
Well, so the thing about the Iowa defense is that there was just nowhere for Stanley to go. So like he tried to move up in the pocket, and like 3 guys would jump on him. And in this game, there were bigger pockets of space.
Yeah.
So the pocket integrity kind of took a step back, and that was a frustrating kind of moment. And then Michigan got on the what I think of as the Michigan State offensive pass interference play. Twin wide receivers. You have a guy in press coverage on the outside one, and the interior wide receiver picks off the guy in press coverage, and then the guy, other guy's wide open in route. OPI every time. OPI every time. Extremely OPI.
Never called.
Never called. Very, very frustrating. So they got Michigan a couple times on that, and then they got what looked like a wide open RPO where Michigan tried to switch that coverage.
And blew the switch?
Yeah, and Metellus blew the switch. So Metellus had a couple of hiccups in this game. There was that bomb down the sideline to, you're going to say this one, Ace.
Josh Imatorbebe.
Thank you. and he, I don't know what happened there, but he seemed to think that the ball was going to be about 5 yards beyond where it actually ended up. And, okay, the wind was a problem all day, so he probably got confused by the wind.
Or the sun.
Well, sure, but the situation there is like, okay, it's 3rd down, it's 3rd and long.
Just track the receiver.
Just track the receiver, yeah. And then, like, make a play on the ball if it comes to the wide receiver. because they're going to punt anyway. Like, that interception isn't worth anything. So,
but he pirouetted and ended up...
He like, spun the wrong way, and then...
I was like, I don't even know. If I did that, I'd probably fall over.
It was a very, like, little league outfielder moment.
Yeah, and so, like, that led directly to another score for Illinois, and they would have been punting otherwise. So that was kind of a big swing point in the game. And then Michigan was just too handsy in the secondary. Like, they got a Hudson pass interference that would have brought up fourth down in the red zone.
yeah. Ambry Thomas had a really unnecessary penalty on the two-point conversion that Illinois got.
And just they had some moments where it's just like they didn't trust their athleticism against Illinois wide receivers. And I guess they have a couple of...
Ema Torbebe is like a 4.5-star USC transfer.
Right.
Like, that guy's talented.
And they repeatedly went after Gray. And when they went after Ambry, he was...
It did not work out nearly
not
as well.
Not really, no, yeah.
I mean, I didn't think Gray was bad, necessarily. Like,
he got beat off the line. Like, one issue he tends to have is, like, he's not always great at getting a jam in and gives up some relatively free releases.
Yeah.
Could use another year of Camp Sanderson?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that's probably some strength stuff. But it's also technique, and he just gives up a free release every so often.
I want people to come to me with their Jordan Glasgow blasphemies so I can absolve them.
Because, he even showed some track down and space ability.
That tackle on Williams didn't look like it was going
to
happen.
No, and Williams is fast.
The scramble, right? Out to the side, yeah. That was...
And I was like, oh, my God. So, okay, Blackshear broke his ankles a couple times, but let's not overreact.
Yeah.
He also tracked down Corbin. I had him, and then obviously the punt block.
Yeah, people have been too eager to replace Jordan Glasgow all year.
He's good.
Yeah.
The other linebacker, a little bit up and down for Cam McGrum.
A Mouton-like performance.
So
we had a couple of those.
On some of these tempo plays, the line doesn't do so well, but Michigan has an opportunity to hold the gains down from like the 10 to 15 to 20 yards that they ended up being to 5. And the way that happens is if...
You fire into the wrong gap?
Well, if McGrone takes on a block, gets over the top of that block, gets his outside shoulder to the field, and then forces it back to Jordan Glasgow, his help. He didn't do that 2-3 times. Yeah. And then there were a couple other incidents where he gets a blocker, and he tries the move that all young linebackers do all the time, which is to go upfield of that block. And he's pulled it off a couple of times. He pulled it off in this game. But when you don't pull it off, you're gone. And that's a -2. So there were a couple of those moments. He did pull it off a couple times. There was that outside zone where he got on his horse, and there was just no chance for the running back. So he's good. He's
also forced that late fumble on Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Man, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a pretty enormous play.
That was a pretty enormous play.
he's still quite good as a blitzer.
Right, so he's
you can see his ceiling moving up. It's just that there are blips every now and then that he hasn't quite mastered.
Yeah, he's inconsistent, and... You know, Devin Bush was just prodigy, right?
Yeah, I mean, son of an NFL player, stuff helps. Right.
Just obviously just had it downloaded from game one.
Yeah.
Even though Cam McGrone isn't there yet, that is his ceiling.
Yeah.
And, I mean...
Yeah, just it takes linebackers different amounts of time to reach that point.
Well,
yeah. David Harris wasn't that guy until his upper-class years either.
Don't you slander David Harris.
I'm just saying he wasn't like the all-world linebacker that he became until his last couple of years.
Right.
He was excellent the whole time, but, you know,
and Bush was
guys
getting,
break out.
Bush was getting snaps his freshman year, and then by his true sophomore year, he was like, we were all like, wow, this guy. And then last year, he was ready for the NFL, and McGrone redshirted last year, took him a few games to get on the field. So I think you're right. His ceiling is the same, but his track is going to be slightly slower.
And McGrone also missed decent chunks of his senior year of high school.
It's true, because... I meant to scout him, and he was
we were
dressed.
There. Yeah.
Well, guess we'll go get dinner.
I'll switch you for that one.
I think that's it.
Mike Dana had a pretty solid game. Another guy who forced a critical fumble that we haven't mentioned yet. Because he forced the ridiculous pop-up fumble that Carlo Kemp caught out of midair.
I mean...
But I wanted to be an interception.
Game there was pretty much over. That was, like, why did the referee have to be like, this, we're known as a fumble and he caught it in the air. It's like, who cares?
Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's good for Dana.
That's just, like, helping out the official scorer on
right,
that
one. Like,
When a referee explains things, I'm going to be happy about it instead of not explanation.
That reminded me of the scene from Necessary Roughness where he's like explaining like various crane kicks. Anyway, nobody needs to hear this.
Special teams?
Special teams. I guess we could go talk about that some.
What's your ideal retirement age? Are you saving and investing enough to reach your goals? Are you on track to pay off your mortgage before retirement? How much income do you really need in retirement? I'm Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. When clients walk out the door after a planning meeting, they know exactly what their needs are and where they stand relative to their goals. In my experience, most advisors don't do any planning at all. So my guess is now is the perfect time for a second opinion. And you can book your second opinion online at peakwm.com.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshare Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshare Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Time it is. It's time for the hottest of all hot takes.
I already did that.
What?
With Rutgers?
Oh, yeah. Well, fine. Now it's time to get the second hottest of all takes from Ace and Bender.
I feel like I'm getting set up for disappointment here.
Welcome to the jungle.
But
I have a moist goatee.
It's really hard to do this while you're staring at me while doing this.
That is your hot take.
My hot take is that whatever producer at ABC who used Matt Patricia as the other example of a great beard next to Lovie Smith needs to not only be fired, but fired into the sun, which adds the heat to this take.
I know. You know what that guy has? He has Matt Patricia's beard. And he thinks he has Lovie Smith's beard.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, just because you can grow a long beard and it's full does not make it a great beard.
No.
I know this because when my beard gets long, it looks like Matt Patricia's, and it's not good, so I keep it shorter than that.
If there are squirrels in your beard, you got to do something about it.
Yeah, it should not resemble a bird's nest, and it should definitely not be put next to Lovie Smith's magnificent facial hair.
Dave Pasternak, give us the third hottest take of all time.
All time is probably going to be a stretch.
All right.
But my hot take has to do with some of the red shirts that they're kind of burning, and so they're kind of hot, but I think you would probably defend the playing of this, but they've burned Cornelius Johnson's, Anthony Solomon's, Chris Hinton's, and I'd even throw Eric All in there as I'm not sure that all these guys needed to have their red shirts burned.
I mean, All is playing meaningful time.
He is.
Hinton is not, but he should be.
Yeah, that's the one where it's like, I would like for them to, like, burn it harder.
The one guy that does stand out there is Solomon, because he's not even the backup Viper.
So two of these guys are consistently getting run on special teams, at least according to the participation chart, which is Hinton, I guess, has to be on, like, the field goal block or the punt block. And Solomon, I think, is on kickoff coverage. And so
burning a red shirt on kickoff coverage is just...
That's what happened to Tyree Cannell. And then Cornelius Johnson, like, we saw him early and was like, okay, this guy looks like he might be able to play a little bit, but they're not really using him in any meaningful...
He doesn't even really come in this game where, like, the receivers keep getting injured.
Yeah, but the other thing is, like, so Cornelius Johnson is probably going to have to maybe start next year.
Right, and that's what I thought you'd say. The problem with that I have with that is that, but he's not even... I mean, what are his snaps helping him with?
Well, he gets to
stand on the field, running out three times a game.
Look, this is something that people have yelled at me about a lot, where it's like, these aren't robots. They're human beings.
You're right.
Except they don't
sound
like that.
But so DJ Turner played in the first...
That was like very close to something I tweeted yesterday, so I'm feeling a little attacked.
Well, all right, I put that on the wrong side of the Idiocracy family tree.
Okay.
It's more like, these are human beings. I ate a Budweiser today.
Ate one.
That's what they say.
That's
I ate a Budweiser.
Interesting. DJ Turner played in the first three games, mostly again on special teams. Has not played since. So that's like kind of like, all right, you're getting him his few games.
Yeah.
That's fine. But now you're playing him for very not meaningful snaps, and you're potentially losing.
All right.
That's my apparently take.
Here's Brian.
All right, continue.
With the hottest... Well, no, it's not going to be the hottest. I already did it. The fourth hottest take of all time?
Yeah, sure.
It's hard to do that voice in a questioning tone.
Okay. You're rising intonation at the end.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah. Get to moisten up your goatee. That'll...
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So, my hot take is it wouldn't have been that bad to lose to Illinois, because at least we would get to keep Lovie Smith's beard for another year. That's a pretty hot take.
That is a hot take, because losing to Illinois would have been very bad.
That's hotter than Ace's Rutgers take.
I mean,
whenever you say the words, it's okay losing to Illinois, I think you've set most things in the world on fire.
But anything being okay about Rutgers.
If you would like to set things on fire in your mouth.
Beautiful.
Get Fuego Box. Fuego Box will bring three hot sauces to your home every month so you can experiment with the outer limits of your palate. Visit fuegobox.com/mgoblog10 to get $10 off your subscription.
The outer limits of your palate.
All right, the game theory portion of our segment here. They turtled in the first half. They had a 3rd-and-1 with 50 seconds left, a couple timeouts, and they just let it roll. They're up 28-7.
I was kind of okay with it. The reason I was okay with it is because you've had, like, a really excellent passing performance from Shea Patterson up to that point.
Have you?
It was
at that point in the first half, he had been kind of dealing.
It was better, yeah.
Like his stats look good. Like he had been pretty consistent. His second half numbers were not nearly as good. So like I can understand kind of wanting to take that to the bank. Like just.
But you're saying that they were playing really well, so they should turtle.
I'm saying like Patterson has not had many great like complete halves this year, and so if you want to like build a quarterback's confidence with a guy who has seemed to like not be totally confident all year, then at least in terms of the way he's playing on the field, then like being able to take that into the locker room, I think is something that would be good.
Yeah, I mean,
also
to me,
there was a lot of wind, and they were going to have
they
to
are
throw
going
the
into the wind,
and they're
going
to have to throw the ball.
And a lot of Patterson's success had been set up by a really good run game that you can no longer even pretend to lean on in that situation.
Right.
I mean, to me, the least you should do there is take time out, run the ball, see if you get a chunk play.
Get a first down.
Fair.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Especially given the way that first half.
Yeah, they probably didn't need to turtle quite that much.
And honestly, it's like after what has happened a couple of times, it's at least a practice run.
And it just kind of felt like they were just like, all right, this is the Rutgers game. Let's just get this over with. And that's kind of what I felt at the time. So this is kind of hindsight, but
yeah, I mean, like, because I said my take about like that I didn't really mind that Michigan turtled there, and then in the second half, a lot of revisionist historians were like, they really should have gone for it, and it was like they really should have not let Illinois score several times
or fumble so many times.
Yeah, and maybe get more than like 21 yards on your first, however, like 15 plays of the half or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The other game theory bit was Michigan went for it on 4th and 2. They were up 10 points. They had a makeable field goal.
The announcers had a really weird way of justifying this aggressive tack.
Okay.
Which was to say that, like, the kicker might get it blocked, and therefore that's why you should go for it. This was after, like, incorrectly advocating for on every, like, game theory decision up to that point. They were not great at the strategizing.
So, I mean, to me, going up 13 doesn't do anything.
No. That was the reason not to do it. Not like your kicker might get this blocked.
So this is more clear when you're up 3 at the end of a game. Like, let's say there's 5 minutes left and you're in field goal range and you're up 3 points.
So they were in that spot. Well, on the previous drive. And they went for it, ran the power play with Shea, and they got it.
Right. I was talking about a little bit later in the game.
I understand.
So the situation there is so if you go for it and you miss, the opposition is set up deep in their own territory, and then they are going to be willing to settle for the field goal. And if you're up 6, they get 4th down, they get to do all the stuff that they and then if they score, you lose. So,
and also, either way in this situation, if the opposition scores 2 touchdowns, you are losing the game.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the situation doesn't really improve your chances much. So, like, if it's 4th and 9, I guess I could see it. But 4th and 2... that's a no-brainer to go.
Yeah.
And as Dave mentioned, they benefited from that decision on the previous drive. Now, Shea Patterson's got to pull the ball.
You know.
But
the defense does come through with a big play after Illinois is stuck deep in their own end.
Yeah. special teams.
We had another Nordine
incident. 34 yards out this time.
Yep.
Which is a little more concerning than the, like, 55 or whatever that the last one was.
You have to think that he probably got this because Moody missed the 30-plus yarder in the last game against Iowa.
Yeah.
And he had his chance. Also, I thought, like, he never gave the ball a chance in the sense that the wind seemed to be moving slightly from his left to his right, and he never really moved the ball over when he was kicking it. Like, you can miss slightly to the left because the wind's going to move it back.
It's true.
Yeah, that ball never looked like it was going in.
Right.
And we know he golfs, so, like, what's the deal?
Well.
The punting return situation was a disaster, but I also just don't put any of that on the returners.
It was a very understandable, like, wind and weird punter-induced disaster.
I mean, I literally just wrote down Mr. Weird Punts for...
Who do you think you are, Mr. Weird Punts?
He was... Like, it'd come off his foot, and you'd be like, are you sure you punted that? What is that?
Go off your knee?
Like, so he put a couple over the sideline, and then the ones he didn't put on the sideline were, like, these just...
Into the winds.
They had, like, a knuckle punter.
Yeah, he had 7 punts, averaged 47 yards a kick with a long of 70.
Wow. Oh, yeah, the one that just kept bouncing and rolling.
Because he also shanked a couple.
Yes.
Yes.
He was just all over the place.
Mr. Weird Punts.
Yeah.
Well, I think also the wind probably played a factor there.
The wind definitely played a factor, but also, like, he just was not consistently striking. Like, I don't know what you were supposed to do as a punt returner in that situation, because I don't know how you could possibly, like, know where to expect the ball was going to go.
I will say that I'm happy that they continue to have two players back on punt returns.
Yes.
Yes.
Even though it didn't really help in this instance.
Well, yeah. They were, Barrett had a -4 on a kick return.
They blocked a punt. We could go
they
with that.
They did. We could do that.
Yeah, that was going down that was a more important special teams play.
They did block a punt. Jordan Glasgow, who we repped earlier.
And Jordan Glasgow, or not Jordan Glasgow, the announcers insisted on calling every white walk on Jordan Glasgow, but this was Jake McCurry, almost blocked a second one.
Right.
And my favorite part of that is the punter got the ball back, and he was about 1 second away from punting it again, which would have been amazing.
Incredible.
And then we looked up the rules, or someone told me online, I think it was Pete Mortensen. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, you can kick it however many times you need to get it across the line. So, like, I just
it keeps getting returned.
I just have this image of the punter getting blocked over and over again, and like Sisyphus trying to get the ball across the line. It's amazing. And then we found out that you can punt it to a teammate. And he can advance the ball if the punt doesn't go past the line of scrimmage.
So now the dream is a fake punt that involves actually punting the ball to one of your own guys.
Behind the line of scrimmage.
And I think someone said that you can throw the ball after this happens.
Okay, so now we have some really wild, like, acid dream scenarios here.
So this is like Aussie rules.
So we need to get a punt unit that is all Australians.
What if you could do like a transcontinental punt? From like if you had like punters on like to like as a gunner so you, as well as the actual
so,
punter.
All right, I got it.
Even John Baxter isn't coming up with this.
I got it. You roll out your punter to one side, and then he punts it to a guy who's just standing there, and then he starts rolling out the other way, and he punts it all the way across the field, and then that guy throws the ball.
I like it.
We could put like three quarterbacks on the field.
I think
it offense.
Could use more punts, though.
It's already got two punts.
It could work in a third.
It's got two punts in a throw. Let's start with the basics until and then get crazy, okay?
What if the other guy then intentionally punts it really hard off one of the opposition team's players and you just recover the fumble?
That doesn't do you any good.
You get the ball back.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does it count as a muff if it's contacted behind the line of scrimmage? I don't think so. Because then a punt.
No, what I'm saying is that last guy like targets somebody who's on the field beyond the line of scrimmage and is like, I'm going to kick the crap out of this ball right at you. Good luck catching it.
Just beans him?
Yeah.
I like the modal diversity of throwing it after your dual punt.
That's true.
So now we're mixing punting with dodgeball.
See, this is what I'm going for.
That's what he's going for.
I know.
These are the things that we're talking about during this football season.
Instead of like actual Michigan football.
I got one more thing.
Is it another way to punt the ball?
No.
Okay.
Then I don't want to hear it.
Really?
Sorry.
Can I say my thing now? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I enjoyed the subplot where Michigan kept trying to block Illinois players into punts that were down. And then
the refs just being like, come on.
And then they did it, and they picked up the ball, and the refs were like, you can't do that. Stop. Please don't.
I mean, it's worth a shot until they tell you to stop.
Sure. It was just... You
never know when John O'Neill's crew is going to magically appear on your field.
They just spent so much time just hammering Illinois guys in the back, trying to like throw them onto the ball. So that was enjoyable.
Totally worthwhile, in my opinion. It provided some intrigue.
And you thought it was the right move to accept the penalty after the third down incompletion?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at that point, their offense is so wonky that it's 3rd and 16. The chances they pick up 10 yards are not good, let alone the 16 they would need to convert. And the field goal they got was a 50-yard attempt. So I think it's worthwhile to turn a 40-yard field goal into a 50-yard one, even if you have some small downside.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't silly at all. It's just me talking. So
right.
So this segment ended on a thud.
More punts.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own. on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't, and it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today for Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again, that's athletic.com/mgoblog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Jamie Mack from Discover on Blog, talking about some blowouts.
Is that Ed Ogeron on the other line? Hey, Coach.
Yes.
Good game last night. At least points are being scored in the SEC. No, I'm doing
Big
I'm doing
Ten
well, guys.
Football. Let him talk.
Right. Hey, you gotta love the on-field Ed Ogeron interviews after a big win. I mean, he's actually surpassing, he's competing with Les Miles in that category down there. You know, I mean.
I don't know if anybody caught the tune pitch Timothy Burke video that had Ed Ogeron's interview down pitched 100%. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Magnificent.
Anyway, you said you got some numbers for us.
Sorry for breaking character.
Yeah. Meanwhile, meanwhile up here in Big Ten country, we're just on a constant loop of blowouts punctuated by ugly, I can't believe I just wasted time watching that Iowa game. we've had 23 league games so far, and the average margin of victory is 25.1 points.
Oof, jeez.
We've had 9 games with the 30 or more margin of victory with six more at 20 or more. We've only had four Big Ten conference games that have been decided by a single score. So we've had twice as many 30-point differences than single scores. And from a betting perspective, the favorites are 15-8 against the spread. When the chalk is covering, they're covering by over 18 points. And we've only had two underdogs win games outright this season, which breaks my heart as an underdog player. Minnesota won outright as a 1-point favorite over Purdue many, many weeks ago when Purdue had all their players. And then yesterday, speaking of Purdue, they actually won outright as a 4-point dog against Maryland. Those are the only two times an underdog has won so far this year out of 23 games.
Yeah, it's been gruesome. So let's pick the most gruesome game first. Indiana 35, Rutgers 0. There are four arrows pointing towards one number on my sheet that Dave has comprised. It is Johnny Langan throwing for 1 yard.
Yep.
On 13
one
attempts.
Single passing yard. This was like watching a no-hitter in baseball. You know, the jinx, you don't want to ever talk about it. Rutgers had one single passing yard at the end of the first quarter, and they were stuck on that all game. I didn't want to tweet about it. I was too afraid to, because I knew if I did, they'd throw a worthless wing pass out there for 8 yards to wreck it. But I was ecstatic when they ended on just one passing yard. They had more passes for negative yardage 3 than they had for positive yards 2.
But they ran for a lot, right?
Well, Pachinko had a couple nice runs, as always.
So total yards in this game is 557 to 75.
Oh, so they didn't run for a lot. That's too bad.
Passing Rutgers, though, that's actually pretty rare. Passing Rutgers is a rarity.
Well, when you get 1 yard passing.
How did this not turn into a total Rutgers for Indiana? They put up almost 600 yards of offense. This was a major missed opportunity.
Yeah, in that regard, I agree.
All right.
I want to mention Watt Filar had another big game, 10 catches, 182 yards. He had 14 catches last time out. Two things about him that I think the podcast audience needs to know about. One, I think they know about. I think they know that his real name is Mr. Elias D'Angelo Filar. Just wanted to throw that out there. And his nickname is WAP because he liked to eat Whoppers as a kid, and that's what his parents nicknamed him.
WAP Filior.
Still goes by that. We're reaching for information on these blowouts.
All right, let's move on. Wisconsin 38, Michigan State 0. Probably the most enjoyable game of the weekend from a Michigan fan's perspective.
Feel a little better about our trip to Madison.
Yeah, you do, because Wisconsin outgains MSU 402 to 149. They bottle up Taylor, but Jack Cohn completes 18 of 21 passes for 8.6 yards an attempt. Lewerke throws for 53 yards and an interception. Their starting running back runs for 16 yards.
Rocky Lombardi plays in this game.
The only note I wrote down on this game is to look at Michigan State's drive chart. And here it goes. Three and out, six play, 13-yard drive, three and out. That takes us to halftime. Second half, they have a 12-play, 39-yard drive that is highlighted by a 20-yard fake punt. Cook. And then they go three and out.
That is magnificent.
And they were down 17-0 at the end of their one drive.
Yeah.
And they punted from the Wisconsin 36.
After fake punting.
Yeah. That was the first drive of the second half. They took the first 7.5 minutes off the third quarter clock.
Was that not the fastest third quarter ever?
There were two drives in the whole quarter.
No, not even. The second drive carried into the fourth.
1.75 drive quarter.
Yeah, at the end of the third quarter, the announcers were like, "We'll hope you enjoyed this commercial-free quarter. We're going to make up for it in the fourth."
Right.
Second half of the Michigan game kind of felt like that, too.
Yeah. And then
so after... those are their 10 drives. Five of those drives didn't even last 1 minute.
After the game.
The Rick Pitino offense.
Hondo. Do you know who Hondo is?
I do know
who Hondo
is.
Oh, yes. I forgot about this.
Hondo,
yeah.
Like the most Michigan State homer of all Michigan State homers. A big...
I mean, even the MSU bloggers hate him.
A big... giant green snowball of a man who's just so huggable asked D'Antonio if it was a mistake to not fire any offensive coaches? And he says, that's a dumbass question. And I'm like, is it really a dumbass question?
Man, when you are snapping at Hondo.
At Hondo.
Maybe you've lost it a little.
This great, giant, huggable puffball of a man.
This dude is just trying to lob up softballs to you.
He's throwing you batting practice for 10 years, and you're like...
One pitch gets a little inside, and D'Antonio's charging the mound, baby!
Yeah. So now the question is, how do we still beat Michigan State and keep D'Antonio there?
I think.
I mean, he's just entrenched, right? As long as legal stuff doesn't pull him out of there.
They cut to him on the sideline, and he just looked cold.
Yeah.
Different is that from any of the last 15 years?
He just looked really, really cold. I can't explain
a corpse.
It. No, like he's just, you know, Paul Christ is out there, and he's just like, yeah, it's cold. I'm gonna coach some football.
Eat a dilly bar.
Yeah, and like D'Antonio was just like, oh. I feel this cold in my soul.
Yeah, I'm still not seeing any difference from previous years.
No, this is just, I think you're just describing D'Antonio.
All right, let me try it again.
Okay.
I feel this cold in my soul in a way that is different from previous years.
That is not fair.
Well, there's not a lot to talk about.
I would have asked a different question at the press conference. I would have just asked, what was the nickname of the fake punt that eventually led to an actual punt? What was the nickname of that? I already have it named the Dark Mantonio, but that, you know, I don't claim ownership of that.
65 Eagles support the troops is probably what they called it. I'm a Catholic. Please overlook all my sins. Anyway, do we have anything else to say about
moving on?
I think that's official now.
I think you've really picked up a certain baton. Purdue 40.
It was necessary.
Maryland 14. Purdue, their 75th string quarterback, whose name is Plummer. I'm going to just call him Jake.
It is Jake Plummer.
Is it?
No, it's Jack Plummer.
Oh, is it Jack? Oh, so close.
And they're not related, which you will hear if you tune into any Purdue telecast these days.
420 yards, 10.2 yards in a stamp, three touchdowns. Piggy is your starting quarterback.
Also, Purdue is the internet team of the week because their quarterback, their leading passer had 420 yards passing, and their leading rusher had 69 yards rushing.
We'll mine content out of this goddamn football season.
Yes, we will.
Piggy rushes for 107 yards on 13 attempts. Good job, Piggy.
Look at the passing stats.
61 of those were on one play where he raced around the end just untouched. Nobody even knew he was there, and nobody could catch up with him.
Unfortunately, I have looked at the passing stats. 5.6 yards an attempt, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Less of a good
job. Yeah, I mean, I know they were behind, but 39 pass attempts for Piggy is beyond pushing it. I mean, we talked earlier in the year about that many attempts with Josh Jackson was kind of pushing the envelope, but you're really not asking for a lot of positive offense if you're asking him to jack the ball up 39 times.
What happened to Kasim Hill?
Purdue had 202 more passing yards on just two more attempts yesterday. Anyway, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
I was just wondering what happened to Kasim Hill.
He transferred to Tennessee. For some reason.
And is apparently not playing.
So he's the only guy except the Illinois tight end who didn't get a waiver.
Transferring to Tennessee in 2019 is a serious hipster move.
What?
Maybe he just doesn't want to get hurt anymore.
I mean, it's like nobody else wants to do this.
Yeah. All right. Is that true? Because
Aubrey Solomon did that. How's that working out?
Well, I mean, it's not like we're a shining city on a hill over here.
No.
Fair.
Probably have more wins than Tennessee, though.
Okay, one more blowout. Minnesota Golden Gophers, 34. Nebraska, 17.
Seven.
Wow.
Seven. In part, largely because Adrian Martinez misses this game, so their quarterback throws for 5.9 yards an attempt, runs for 3.3 yards a carry. And Smith and Brooks, it's like 1926 2016. It's 2016 up in Minneapolis because these guys are both going for basically 100 yards apiece at 7.7 yards an attempt.
And Muhammad Ibrahim isn't far behind them.
No.
Good God.
I ran out of spaces to write things.
That number,
he had 84 yards.
That number came down during the second half. They were at 9.6 yards per carry at halftime.
Good God.
Yeah. I mean, it was an absolute rout. I mean, you know, the Huskers were behind the eight ball, you know, anyway, like you said, without Adrian Martinez. They were solid touchdown underdogs. Minnesota's offense just kept, you know, just keeps rolling here week after week, it seems like, against the subpar Big Ten competition, at least. And they got two touchdowns right away. Their second touchdown drive, I have it in my notes, it was ridiculous. It was, Shannon Brooks goes for 25. Rodney Smith rips off a 15-yard run, then a 10-yard run. And then Mo Ibrahim, who's back, comes in and finishes the drive with a 15-yard touchdown. Nebraska just, I mean, they were just dead on defense. The weather was terrible. And then Wandale Robinson went out of the game as well. So Nebraska just sort of, it was only 14-0 at halftime, but it felt 28-0. And it just never got close. I was disappointed that the margin wasn't bigger because Nebraska is tied with Illinois since they joined the league, with 10 30-point losses. We're tossing Rutgers out of this equation. So the teams that have been in the league, they had a chance to break that tie yesterday, but they didn't.
After almost starting 0-3 to a certain extent, is it unreasonable to think that they could be 11-0 going into Wisconsin at home, given the fact that their next games are Rutgers, Maryland? They host Penn State, who has not looked uber explosive.
No.
They go to Iowa, who...
That's where the dream dies.
You think so? They don't score touchdowns.
Kinnick Stadium is where so many dreams die, man.
Other than last night.
That's fair.
And then they host... Or then they go to Northwestern.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, it's definitely on the table.
Like, it may not be probable, but it's not like writing it off, are we?
And then they're going to get absolutely clunked by Wisconsin. But yeah, they're still going to oar the boat to like their greatest season since Glenn Mason, possibly right beyond that.
Yeah, and even if they aren't 11-0 going into that Wisconsin game, it's looking pretty likely that you know, they go 2-1 in that Penn State Northwestern Iowa stretch, that they're going to at least be playing for the division title, which that, I agree, is something. But I definitely would see Wisconsin blowing them out. But right now, Minnesota's got it going. They are averaging 6.7 yards per play in their last 12 games against Power 5 opponents. That's 11 Big Ten teams and the bowl game last year. But no Michigan, no Michigan State, no Penn State. One game against Ohio State in that streak. When there is that one game against Wisconsin last year.
They were in that game against Ohio State for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I could still see Muhammad Ibrahim. That was the first game that he broke out in. I could still see him running an open field, you know, in that game.
Yeah. It's something where you're like looking at Minnesota's ground game and like you're like, we took Ed Warner from you, and now you're killing it. And Michigan ran for 100 yards against Rutgers.
Right.
Anyway, let's not. You
know, what's the next game, Brian?
Let's not dwell on our things.
I guess the thing with Minnesota is, and I kind of want them to keep winning because, like, you know, getting back to the top where we talked about the blowouts, you know, we kind of all thought that maybe this is going to be kind of a banner year for the conference. And it's kind of not living up to expectations, but at least Minnesota is sort of kind of eye-opening, at least. You know, I mean, Nebraska and Purdue have been kind of prevented to take steps forward because they've had a lot of injuries, you know, and whatnot. So those two exciting teams are kind of off the board. Iowa is terrible to watch. Northwestern is terrible to watch. I unfortunately watch every Indiana game, so that's hazardous. So Minnesota at least is sort of like
they're fun.
Something decent that's happening, and they're not on Michigan's schedule, and they got a lot of good skill players that are fun to watch. So I'm kind of enjoying their ride a little bit.
They were also about 5 points away from going 0-3 in the non-conference against like UNLV and South Dakota State,
Fresno and Georgia State.
Yeah, totally. Yep. And it's kind of alarming how much harder it was for them to get by Fresno, Georgia Southern, and South Dakota State than it is Purdue, Illinois, and Nebraska. And they were barely averaging 5 yards per play during the non-conference, but they're right up there at, what's this here? They're right below Ohio State. No, they're right ahead of Ohio State in yards per play in conference games, 7.6 to 7.4. And nobody else in conference games is above 6 yards per play.
Well, I looked this up, and even before they put up...
Now, there's a lot of competition involved there, you know. I mean, they haven't played the best defenses, obviously.
I looked this up, and even before they went for 450 yards against a Power 5 school, they were 14th in S&P Plus offense, 50 spots ahead of Michigan, with some preseason assumptions baked in that are unkind to the Gophers. So,
yeah.
There you go.
Speaking of Iowa being terrible,
Penn State 17, Iowa 12 in the unwatchable game of the week. Penn State wins this. They failed to get 300 yards of offense. Sean Clifford throws for 117. 61 of those go to KJ Hamler. Most of those behind the line of scrimmage. KJ Hamler dodges about 65 guys to get those 61 yards. I think we should have recruited KJ Hamler.
Hey, but that's my line. Jerk.
Yeah.
And then Nate Stanley throws 43 times. Because they can't run the ball at all.
Their interior line is just terrible.
And I feel a little bit less good about last week's performance.
Although I do feel a little bit better about the game against Penn State, though.
True. They get outgained by just over 50 yards here. Iowa turns the ball over twice, and that's kind of the difference, especially because Iowa's second turnover is a real yakety-sacks moment deep in their own territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
both their turnovers were in their own territory, I think.
Okay,
from what I remember. But I mean, when you do that, like that was a lot of Penn State scoring.
Yes, sir.
I think the exciting part of this game was monitoring Iowa's touchdown drought against Power 5 opponents.
They broke it.
Yeah, the announcers were keeping track of that, like it was like each drive was like a new inning or something. But they'd reached 25 straight drives against Power 5 opponents.
It took an absolutely ridiculous catch to break that streak, too.
on a well-defended play.
Yeah, exactly.
I had actually already flipped over to the LSU-Florida game, and then my speed went like, oh, my God!
Yep, I had done the same thing and switched back in time to see a replay.
And I was like, oh.
Because someone mentioned pro throw, and I was like, well, as long as you mean the good pro throw thing, I'd better check this out.
I think that overstates it a little bit. It was good.
Oh, yeah. That does overstate it. The pro throw catch is on another level. But
so they've had 47 drives this year against Power 5 opponents, and they've only scored 5 touchdowns, and 3 of those were against Rutgers way back in week 2.
Well, they only put up 30 points against, so that's, there you go.
Noah Kane looked.
Yeah, I mean, that Rutgers game, if I recall, that hung on like 14-0 for the longest time, and like Iowa's only offense was like an Amir Smith-Marset bomb. So, I mean, they really had a hard time shaking Rutgers, if you want to compare like how Indiana or how Michigan played Rutgers, for example.
Yeah, it's something.
I just said that Noah Kane looked good. I mean, they've gotten this kind of string of high end running backs in the last what 5 or 6 years, and their freshman this year looks like he might be.
They've been looking for somebody to emerge at running back this year. They've been cycling through everybody.
Slade has done not much for Journey Brown, and then now Noah Kane looks like he might be taking the reins.
Well, I mean, they had Kane close that game out, and he closed it out by breaking some tackles and making some yards.
Well, he has 22 carries and no other running back. He's more than 4 in this game. That was a bell cow game for him.
So my selection in draft again for running back has been outstripped in poorness by aces because I took Ibrahim.
You also took Drew Wilson.
Well, he got hurt.
So the thing about Clifford then, you know, we bag on Patterson and all that, and that's legit, but is there a big difference? Like, we've seen these stats week in and week out, and when Penn State is playing a team with somewhat of a defense, I mean, even against, like, Buffalo, he's not looking great.
No, and they still have Ricky Rain, who I feel is probably in the Wile E. Coyote, I just noticed I'm looking down year. So, yeah, I this will be pretty much a replay of Iowa's last two games. It's going to be Iowa versus Iowa.
Yeah.
Would you feel better? Would you feel like Michigan...
A lot of Spider-Man pointing at each other.
Yeah.
Would you feel like Michigan should maybe win this game if it wasn't at night?
If it wasn't at night at Beaver Stadium?
Yeah.
Oh, we need to talk about the touchdown overturn.
Yes, we do. Yes, yeah. We really, really do.
So this isn't John O'Neill's fault.
I mean, I don't really know what else to say about it. I don't know what else to say about the Iowa-Penn State game other than that touchdown overturn. I mean, that was so ridiculous. And we're not even watching the fourth quarter if they make that call correct. They run away with the game, I think, from that point.
Tutty Blog wanted to play the game under protest after this, which I like. Sorry, guys. That's not
that's
how
little,
it works.
That's a little, yeah,
I had common ground with one of the Teddy Grod blog people for the first time because he wanted John O'Neill thrown in federal prison, and I was like, "That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's do that."
But like you said, this was not his fault, except for him being just in the general vicinity and giving off John O'Neill vibes
right.
to whoever was watching this replay.
I mean, the replay booth calls down, and the replay booth makes the call. So like, John O'Neill just was just like.
Because it's crazy. Right. This is called a touchdown on the field.
Yeah.
They put it up. They have a pylon cam view.
Mm-hmm.
Pylon cam. You cannot get more down the line than pylon cam.
Yeah.
That clearly
yeah.
shows a touchdown. But they look at the other view where if you don't understand angles, then you might think the ball is like a foot short. Because there's another end zone shot, but it's from behind the end zone.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only explanation for them possibly overturning that.
But yeah. then they,
is that whoever is in the replay booth does not understand how angles work.
Then they have like a first and goal at the one. They throw the ball, I believe.
They throw at least once.
And they get a holding call
mm-hmm.
that looks absurd.
Yeah.
It's just like of all the Penn State people on their message boards who are like, this is a conspiracy that's been going on for 25 years. Now I believe it.
Yeah.
At long.
Yeah.
We have to pull that shirt from the store.
Yeah. You've been converted.
Yeah. The second one was totally legit, but the first one, it was just like, what is. You're holding on that on first and goal from like the inch line.
They also ran from inside the one and got stuck.
That was bad.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens sometimes.
Got to score, man.
We're familiar.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, back to my original question before you went.
What is your question?
Based on what you've seen from Clifford and this offense, if this game wasn't at night, would you feel like Michigan and Penn State are on pretty level ground here?
I feel like they're on pretty level ground anyway. Like, right. They're both kind of bad.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like Michigan's going to get run out of the building next weekend?
Oh, no, I do. Because I'm deep in the B-pone. But
what does your brain think?
But it's not like a rational extension of the way Penn State is playing.
B-pone is a completely rational state of being.
I'm saying it's a rational
totally.
State of being. I'm saying it is not based on like your opinion of how the Penn State game is going to go. It has almost nothing to do with how Penn State has been playing.
Right. At least they don't coat themselves in butter before a game.
We talked about this. It's not butter.
Crisco.
It's your phone.
Or phone parts.
And we already talked about this too. They're going to bring out footballs with phone covers on them.
Phone covers on the
ball. But this is a road game, so we're not going to be able to do
but
this.
But you carry your own balls,
carry
right?
Your own balls.
Ooh, that's right.
Offense plays with his own balls. Anyway, I think we still have Jamie on the line.
I am.
Hey,
I'm
Jamie.
Just listening. It's good. I'm all right.
How you doing there?
I'm the night game aspect, I think, is what probably makes us feel like there's no chance for Michigan. Somebody said last night on Twitter that being at night, it's worth like 10 points. And I tweeted back, yeah, off of two Michigan turnovers. And then somebody corrected
me. Yeah, I saw that.
No, off of two of the Michigan turnovers. Like there'd be more than two. You know, it's like, okay, I got. But,
all right.
I just don't see what we've seen out of this team this year. Like if they can just handle the atmosphere, you know, I mean, it's a turnover team. Apparently it's just going to be one of those years.
Also, the recent history of the series is alternating humiliating blows.
Yes.
It's our turn.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's sort of what I keep telling myself as I settle very comfortably into my B-pone chair is that, you know, when it comes to Penn State and Michigan and Wisconsin and still even Michigan State, you know, we're all just going to just rotate spanking each other on each other's home field. And then, you know, maybe one of us can beat Ohio State every now and then. But that's sort of what I feel is going on in the league. So, like, Wisconsin was just set up to rout Michigan this year, especially after what happened last year and, you know, the revenge tour and all that. And I kind of feel like the same thing with this game. I think the saving grace is that they didn't have a week off Penn State, but they had to kind of go through this. So maybe they're not, you know, completely charged up the way Wisconsin is. But I just, you know, I feel like until certain roster issues get leveled out until Michigan finds a quarterback. I just feel we're just going to be in this group and we're just going to be exchanging wins every year, which that's not the worst. Better than they had been, but I think we're looking, you know, that's, you know.
We are hoping for something higher.
Yeah. And yep. That's still out there, you know, down the line. I think that I like some of the young defensive players that have been thrown into the lineup, and you kind of can see the defensive program for a couple of years still being really, you know, obviously still being really good. And if they could just fill out somewhere on offense, I don't know. I have no clue. The offense is just so bad. It's one of the biggest disappointments.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, we will talk to you next week, Jamie.
Listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Nasternak. Coat the ball and stick 'em.
I don't need to turn down or up.
Turn down for what?